Travel northwest from the shipyard across San Francisco, and you'll reach the most recognizable icon of the city, the Golden Gate Bridge, a peaceful, scenic sight to behold. But the bridge is also the site of something darker. It's known to be the number one site for suicides in the country. Last year, 46 people jumped to their deaths, but 118 others were talked out of jumping by bridge workers and police. One of them is Highway Patrol Sergeant Kevin Briggs. For 23 years, he's patrolled the Golden Gate Bridge for suicide jumpers. He talked hundreds of people off the ledge and back onto the bridge and earned the nickname the Guardian of the Golden Gate. His powers of persuasion were the doorway between life and death. Sometimes, unfortunately, they just weren't enough.
But we live forever with what could we have done better? What could we have changed, even if we couldn't?
That may all change soon. Officials are close to authorizing a $66 million suicide net that they're hoping will save dozens of lives. Last year, Kevin Briggs retired to be able to work on suicide prevention full time. He came by our studios and spoke with me about his experiences on the bridge.
We will get a call. Generally, it's someone will pick up one of the emergency boxes there. Or one of us or Golden Gate Bridge staff who was always patrolling the bridge will see it and then will respond. Per the Streets and Highways Code in California, the CHP is responsible for the traffic management and such on that bridge. So that's why we go down there.
Do you feel that that was a heavy responsibility and a heavy burden on your shoulders?
It is. And if I'm the one handling that call, I say a little prayer each and every time that I'm going down there trying to get my act together of, we don't know much when you're just getting that call. All you really get is there's a person over the rail. I'll say a little prayer, hoping that it goes well, that we get down there and we're safe and they're safe. And this comes to a general great conclusion for all.
And I know that I know every case is different. Every human being is different with different reasons and a different mindset. But what were some of the reasons that were given to you that you were hearing from these people who wanted to jump as you talked to them?
Most of the time it's depression, and it's depression been going on for many years. And it's that feeling of hopelessness. They feel they're a burden to society, to their family, to their loved ones, and they just don't see hope. All they see is black. I can't imagine being hopeless. But if you are, who would I like to have come talk to me? What can that person say? What can we do as a plan to try to at least get you through that day?
And what would that be most of the time?
Many times, just listening and giving your full attention to that person. You're not on that cell phone. I'm just looking at their face. I'm trying to read their face, look into their eyes, and have them look at me instead of looking down at the water. I'd much rather have them looking at if there is a blue sky on that bridge when we're in those nice days, looking up or looking across at the city, what I can do to bring them back up and give them some hope.
I'm wondering if there are specific stories of people that just stick in your mind.
Now, one guy, he was on the west side of the bridge, which you don't see very often because that side is closed to pedestrians at all times. And he was already over the rail when we got the call and I got to him, and myself and a sheriff, Marin County Sheriff deputy, actually took turns speaking with him. And he wouldn't talk to us hardly at all, and he kept holding on to the rail, but he was down below, so it was very hard to even see him at times. And it was getting dark and very foggy. This whole event went on for 7 hours. And we would trade off speaking with him, and it took a long time, but we finally found out that he had a family and some kids, and that really set it in motion for him to come back over. We use that quite a bit. We call that a hook.
What would you say? Can you pretend right now, kind of go back to that time?
And I tell him, I told him, I said, hey, what about your kids? Do you know this date? Now, if you accomplish this act of suicide forever on this date, this is what your kids are going to have. They'll probably come to this bridge and want to throw flowers off or something for you. This is going to be such a horrific memory for them. And I want to tell you something else. Did you know that if you commit suicide, your kids have a much, much greater chance of committing suicide? It's a fact. And I use these things not to upset him, but to show him that, hey, this is what's going to happen if you do this act. And also, there's a lot of hope. There's a lot of help out here for folks. When you get on that computer and start looking into these organizations and giving them a call, they want to help. They're there.
And what happened to that man? You got through to him with his children. He thought he was a burden on his children.
He did.
And when that works, how do you feel?
When they do come back over?
When they come back over, they're back. What does that feel like for you?
It is a huge, huge relief.
Do you remember a time when you were talking to somebody and they jumped?
Oh, absolutely.
Can you recall that for us?
The latest one? The last one that I had?
Sure.
That's the one that I speak about sometimes, and his name is Jason Garber. He was 32 years old and from New Jersey, and he had flown out to the bridge on two other occasions prior to my meeting him. But this was July 22nd of last year, and I received this call, and I just happened to be out. So I responded down there. I was the first Highway Patrol officer there. There's a cord that's over that pedestrian rail that protrudes from the bridge a little bit, I believe about 32 inches. It looks like an I-beam paralleling the bridge. Jason was sitting on this, and he was facing northbound towards Marin. And we spoke for about an hour, and Jason was very articulate. He was not under the influence of drugs or alcohol, which we do see quite a bit down there. He had no so-called liquid courage in him. College educated, just a really nice guy. So we spoke for about an hour, and then Jason kind of looked over at us, and he asked us if we knew about Pandora's Box. And we said yes, and he went on for a little bit, and he goes, what happens when you open Pandora's Box, and like the hope that you thought would be there is gone? And I was standing just north of Jason, so I could see his whole face. And he looked forward, and I saw a tear come out of his eye and just start falling down his cheek. And he was sitting on that cord, and he just leaned to his right and was gone. And it was horrific. It really was. I take it very personally. The Golden Gate Bridge officer took a very, very, you know, it happened to us. It's personal. It's a loss. It's a loss of a life.
But
we feel like we failed.
But it wasn't your fault.
No. But we live forever with what could we have done better? What could we have changed? Even if we couldn't, that's just how we are.